We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Ooh. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
2 seconds. Middleton. Yes! Chris Middleton.
Back jumper. Got it!
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep. Well, sort of. This is the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and I am one of your regular hosts, Ty Windisch, but I'm not joined by Rohan Kadi today. Actually, I joined Joey Levin, host of the NBA Morning Deuce podcast, directly after the Bucks held on against Boston last night. We talked a good deal of Bucks topics, including that game itself and some broader themes, so we figured Eurostep subscribers would really enjoy the conversation as well. We also covered a ton of trade deadline, buyout, and other NBA stuff, so you can get a nice look around the league here. If, actually, when you enjoy this episode, be sure to go subscribe to the NBA Morning Deuce on whatever platform you're currently listening to Eurostep on, and go give the podcast at NBA Morning Deuce and Joey at Joseph R. Levin a follow on Twitter. This comes out every weekday. Plenty of great content, and he's pulling in a ton of great guests right now to be guest co-hosts. So subscribe, check it out every day, get more of that NBA fix. Okay, let's get into the episode.
Welcome into the NBA Morning Deuce for Thursday, March 25th. It is the trade deadline. We have arrived, as we're recording this podcast, Wednesday night. We are less than 24 hours from the trade deadline, and we have there's a big slate of games, but not a lot of great games tonight. But I planned on that. I actually did plan on that. I knew there was going to be one great game. I knew there was going to be one great game. That's why I brought on a great guest co-host to talk about the best game of the night, the Bucks and the Celtics, and who better to talk about the Bucks than the host of the Eurostep podcast, the number one Milwaukee Bucks podcast, the authority on all things Milwaukee Bucks, Ty Windisch, my buddy from Blue Wire Pods. We obviously, as you all know, have been there now for about a month. Ty, thanks for joining me right after the Bucks just had a wild finish in their game against the Celtics.
I'm glad the Bucks blew their huge lead to give us better content. That was very considerate of them. I'm honored to be on the show as a guest co-host, especially on trade deadline day. This is like a sacred day for NBA coverage. So I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love getting all these different types of voices. Like this week in particular, I've had so many different co-hosts. My regular co-host is on vacation this week, so I've had Jabari Davis from Dunks and Discourse. I had Dan Favalli from Hardwood. I even on the show yesterday when I had him, I was Hardwood Knox. But so it's cool. And especially this week, cause we're not like an insider show. We're not reporting anything. We're doing what everybody else is doing. We're speculating. We're talking about where we want to see guys go. And there's so many updates, and you know how it is with Twitter. It just nonstop. So we're going to get into a ton of trade stuff tonight. We're going to talk about all these teams. Got to talk about Kyle Lowry because that seems to be the biggest trade story. But of course, let's start with your Bucks. You know, I was watching that game and I was watching the Raptors game because I kind of wanted to see what happened with the Lowry situation. So I had my eye on both, and I kind of shifted my focus to the Raptors game because it looked like Bucks are going to win this game, and Celtics look like what I think they look like, which is a struggling team that's not really what people expected them to be this year, and sort of how they played until you tell me, like, where did it go wrong?
I think a lot of Bucks fans, as is per usual, are upset about officiating. I don't think they got benefited necessarily or at all by the whistles down the stretch, although I will say Milwaukee just, I think, got a little complacent, got a little bit sloppy. I think, especially in a game where Giannis returning from banging up his, I think knee is officially, he has a leg thing, it feels like, every so often. He has knee tendonitis on and on over the last few years. So his first game back from that, obviously, it's always a priority for defenses to stop him. Giannis not having a good game, 4 for 11, 13 points. Still 8 rebounds, 7 assists. You know, for any role player, it's an incredible game. For Giannis, yeah, it's a bad game. It wasn't a good game for him. But I think if he's on, maybe it doesn't matter that they get a little sloppy and they stop getting any sort of calls. But he wasn't. So, you know, the Bucks, this is something they've struggled with a good deal recently in recent weeks, I would say, is they're letting guys leak out. Like, even sometimes on missed shots, they'll give up basically open layups. That happened several times in this game. Some really sloppy three-point defense, which is a shame because it seems like every time it feels like they've really turned the corner on three-point defense. And, of course, I tweet it, and then they give up like 3 open tweets, which is like the law of tweeting about basketball games in motion. It's just how it always goes. But fortunately, you know, Chris Middleton really brought it in this game. Jrue Holiday, Bobby Portis had a great game. And the threes were falling for the Bucks early and throughout the whole game, and they shot 45%. But I think really it came down to Bucks get a little complacent, get a little sloppy, way too much Brook Lopez centric offense late in this game. Dante DiVincenzo's highs and lows will hit you out of nowhere sometimes. And really they lost it a little bit, and I'm just glad that they were able to pull it out and not lose their second Celtics game of the year on a horrible back-breaking buzzer-beating shot. I don't know if you remember the Tatum shot in their first game of the year, but it was a similar situation where the Bucks clearly deserved the win and just gave it away. They came so close to doing that again, but luckily...
this time it was Daniel Tice.
Yeah, this time it was Daniel. And it's funny, I said earlier, and I don't think I actually posted it anywhere. I just said it in like our podcast Discord, but I was like, every shot Daniel Tice takes is a win for the Bucks. And that mantra really came in clutch in this game.
But hell yeah.
It was very nerve-wracking seeing him pull up so wide open, though.
Here is one observation I had, and this is probably for a Bucks fan and a Bucks host who has a lot of Bucks followers, probably a tough question, maybe, or maybe not.
We got hard balls right away.
Yeah, I have to do it because it's my main observation comes from the last two offensive possessions for the Bucks. And this has been my thing with the Bucks. And I think a lot of people who don't probably follow the Bucks as closely as you do and your listeners do, is that the last two offensive possessions for the Bucks, when they're up two, Giannis doesn't take a shot or really have the ball in his hands. One is initiated by Jrue Holiday, and it ends up being kicked out to Chris Middleton. The next one, which was their last offensive possession, Giannis has the ball. I think he got an offensive rebound maybe, and then gives it to Chris Middleton, who then initiates the offense. Is that as concerning to Bucks fans who have been watching this team for the last few years as it would be to someone like me, who's like, I got to have the ball in my best player's hands at the end of a game to create offense? Or has it just become a thing of where, no, we understand, like, that's not what Giannis is. That's why we went and got Jrue Holiday. Now we have two options at the end of games.
It's a really good question, and I think it's kind of central to probably the ceiling of the Bucks and how their last two playoff runs have gone. I think sometimes I feel like the team has almost felt that what you're describing of, like, do we need to get Giannis the ball? And that's resulted in, like, the Raptors series where they threw three bodies at him over and over, and at that point he wasn't really equipped to beat that. He's become a much better passer from that mid-tier area between the three-point line and the rim, so he is better in those situations now. I would have liked to see him get the ball a little bit more, but I do think counterpoint to that, and it's this interesting push and pull between, you know, basically on offense, if you're a great player, you're probably ending up on one of the two sides of a pick and roll in a late game situation. I mean, some guys will just ISO straight up. But if you have, you know, a great guard and a great big man, or, you know, forward or whatever it is, you're the initiator or the role man. I think Giannis is better as a role man. I see why the Bucks and Giannis want him to become better as an initiator, because those are the players that you cannot ever scheme away, right? Like, you can't do anything to stop LeBron with the ball in his hands late in the game. He doesn't need anyone to do anything for him. He can just go do it. And it wasn't always the case. I mean, I think people forget, you know, that Dallas series, there's a lot of analogs, I think, to the Toronto series for Giannis, and that he wasn't equipped to beat defenses when they stonewalled him yet. So I think it's not automatically a concern for me to come all the way back around and actually address the question. I would have liked to see him rolling, though. And I do think that's my answer is, he can initiate in those situations. Sometimes they've done more dribble handoffs and fake dribble handoffs, which have been a lot of fun with some of the dangerous shooters they have on the roster this year. But if he's rolling in pick and roll and the right play is for Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday to take a wide open pull-up shot from the mid-range or to hit a wide open three-point shooter, I can live with that. I hate it. I think the very last possession you're talking about, that was when Giannis passes to Chris. It kind of looks like they're going to set up that pick and roll. And then instead they go for this contested lob to Brooke Lopez over Marcus Smart. It was garbage. That was an absolute garbage execution in that situation. And that's where I'm like, I don't need Giannis to pound the air out of the ball in that situation, but I do want him involved in the play. I think he absolutely has to be involved, at least to that extent, in every single play. So that really frustrated me. Yeah. I didn't understand the execution at all. And that's kind of the criticism of Chris Middleton, is that he'll have moments of pure greatness where he's going to, you know, hit five shots in a row in defenders' faces. And then sometimes he'll fumble the ball away or attempt whatever the hell that was.
Well, I will say this. I think ultimately when it comes down to playoff time, that's where the Drew move is going to benefit you guys. Like, I saw you tweet during the game, like, I think we underestimated how good Drew actually is. And that's just kind of the story of Drew Holiday's career, right?
Really, I mean,
he's been underestimated at every stop. Now, Alex, my co-host, is a Philly guy. So he's been watching Drew since the beginning. So he's always been high on Drew. We talk about New Orleans all the time on here and how they've struggled this year. And he wholeheartedly blames it on the fact that they don't have Drew Holiday anymore and that it's really messed with their flow. And we were really high, even with, you know, people were back and forth on the Bucks, you know, how much they gave up for Drew, but we were really high on it because, just to be honest, we're both really low on Eric Bledsoe, not big fans of Eric Bledsoe, which I guess I would imagine after the last couple of playoffs, the Bucks fans are probably not the highest on him either. So I think that's going to benefit you guys. I was going to ask you before I even saw the tweet, since it's trade deadline and we're talking trades a lot at this point in the season with less than 30 games left, the way the Bucks are playing, how do you grade the Drew trade at this point?
A+.
Yeah.
A+. No hesitation. A+. It's every good Drew game, you're going to see a lot of tweets from Bucks Twitter. And it's basically just people saying, can we send the Pelicans some more picks? This might've been a ripoff in the other direction. I thought it was funny. I mean, I think people killed the Bucks for a long time for being too inactive. And then they give up like first round picks in 2025 and 2027 with a reigning two-time back-to-back MVP on the roster to get Drew Holiday, and suddenly they're paying too much. I don't care about the picks, man. Like, they've blown enough low-end first round picks in my time covering the team to where if, you know, DJ Wilson was just jettisoned off the roster, Malcolm Brogdon was a second round pick. Dante DiVincenzo looks good. I'll give them Dante DiVincenzo. But like Rashad Vaughn was one of their mid first round picks. Like those are the guys you end up with more often than not, right? Like you can get good players there, but you get a lot of DJ Wilson's and Rashad Vaughn's in the lower first round. Thon Maker, 10th overall. So give me a guy like Jrue Holiday, who is older than Giannis, but certainly their primes align, at least for the next few years. I think the hope is, and the expectation is, they get a contract extension, so he'll be around for a little while here. I'd like to see that done. I would sleep a little bit easier at night when they actually put pen to paper there. But I think for what he adds, and especially you nailed it, it's the playoffs, getting that other initiator you can really trust. I mean, he's never going to be talked about with like the Kyrie Irvings of like handles, but I've got to say his combination of having the ball on a string at all times, he's got perfect control, and his strength just allows him to go get buckets. He doesn't have to get around a guy. He'll just go directly through somebody and lay the ball in. His control around the rim is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And the Bucks needed that dimension. I mean, Eric Bledsoe, really good guy, but flipping from him to Jrue Holiday around, I think, an improved roster outside of that even, but you know, still with Chris, still with Giannis, still with Brooke Lopez, etc., it's like a massive difference to them being able to actually execute. They didn't do a good job tonight. I think Jrue was a little banged up. It looked like he tweaked a knee.
Yeah, I saw that at the end.
He stayed in the game, so hopefully nothing serious. But the Bucks have been a little lackadaisical with leaving guys in. Hopefully nothing major there. But the ability they have and their ceiling now of executing in these late games and in half-court offense, it's a different stratosphere for this team.
Absolutely. And then you mentioned all that and you didn't even mention, which I know you know, but one of the best two-way point guards defensively is one of the best point guards there is, and he can guard any six, so he's switchable. I mean, he could switch probably three positions.
Yeah.
Sometimes definitely. Four, depending on how small the lineup is, right? So now before we talk about a couple other roster things, and I actually, DiVincenzo is fascinating to me because I think his progression has been this year in particular has been incredible. But despite everything that happened tonight, the win's a win. So what's it now? 13 of the last 14, hottest team in the NBA. I mean, it's the only other team that you could really put in that category would be Phoenix, the way they've played over the last 25 or so games. But, I was very critical of this team when they lost five in a row. When they were, I think they were like 16 and 13. I wasn't sure where things were headed. And then this run, what do you attribute to this turn? This run and this turnaround from they looking pretty rough in that stretch.
Yeah, they certainly were. Probably the lowest that we got ever on Eurostep on Chris Middleton was the back-to-back Raptors games in that run where they kept sending doubles. So the one thing we should note, Jrue out for a lot of those games. And I think that made a huge difference. So that's right. The first thing that I attribute. He gets back, he gets going. They're just such a different team. I mean, there's good players and there's players who can make a difference in momentum. And I know there's a lot of people who will say momentum's not real. There's no stats behind it. I don't care about any of that. Sorry. I like stats. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-stats, but I am a believer in momentum. And I think Jrue Holiday is the kind of guy who can shift that, like just in one play. He can just go out and do that. And that's the kind of thing you need to go on a run like this. When the game is in the balance, Jrue is the kind of guy who can deliver it to you. But also, I think even bigger than that, I think Giannis got a little bit more comfortable with some of the schematic changes the Bucks have made this year. I think the Bucks got a little bit better at executing, especially some switching stuff on defense. But Giannis really looked like Giannis for most of that run. Earlier in the season, good numbers. You know, he'd have like 22. He had a lot of assists in some of the games. He was really finding shooters and players in the dunker spot, which is one of the changes they made, is getting more players cutting out on the baseline to make it easier for Giannis to find somebody when he does get doubled or tripled. But he just didn't look quite right, you know? He's just a little bit too passive. During that run, the two things that I'd say has changed the most, and aside, you know, getting more comfortable with schemes is nice, but Jrue comes back and real MVP Giannis comes back and puts himself in that conversation. And then suddenly they just started blowing the doors off teams. I mean, with Jrue playing well and Giannis playing like at peak Giannis levels, they're just really hard to beat, especially now that, you know, Pat Connaughton, a maligned contract by myself as well over the summer, suddenly shooting around 40% from deep is a huge change for this team. Bryn Forbes, Bobby Portis are both absolute snipers this year. It's so hard to stop Giannis in a normal circumstance, but in this newer offense with a better, you know, co-second guy, Drew and Chris now, mm-hmm. with all these shooters, it's just like the team becomes a little bit of a buzzsaw. And they that was on display for three quarters tonight, at least.
Yeah, the Bryn Forbes is, it's so funny. I feel like every like third game that we cover, that we hit on this show, we look at the, you know, you watch some of the, either watch the game or you watch the highlights and then you look at the box score and it's like Bryn Forbes, 7 of 7 from three. It's remarkable. And then, I mean, Dante, look, coming out of college, I thought that list of busts that you named, I thought he was going to be on it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, I liked him in college. I thought he would have got hyped up because of that run. And even in his first year, I thought, I don't know, man, but the way he's shooting the ball now, he's become such a valuable player to that team. It's pretty remarkable. But yeah, you mentioned Giannis and the MVP play. It's really interesting because we've also said on this show that no matter how good he plays this year, he can't win MVP because voters just won't vote for him. But the way the league is, you know, crumbling right now, it seems like he actually now has a pretty real chance if he keeps playing this way, and particularly if they keep playing this way. Embiid, who knows, he may not play a ton in the second half because he's Embiid. Then and LeBron, like if AD comes back and the Lakers are even halfway competent in winning some games with AD, LeBron won't play a ton. Why would you?
Yeah.
So just by attrition, him, Jokic, and I guess Harden would be the guys.
Yeah, Dame, I think, in that conversation.
Oh, yeah, Dame. Now. Dame's been my pick, but I just don't think Dame's going to get enough traction.
I think they'd have to be top three at the end of the year. I think he or Jokic, if they're top three at the end of the year, is going to have a really good chance. We'll see with Embiid. Harden, I don't know. I don't know if Harden's really going to win it. I guess it's the same thing.
I totally disagree with him being in the conversation, to be honest. But I guess I see what people are saying, but I mentioned this yesterday with Dan, and I probably mentioned it with Jabari. I think a lot of what people are talking about with Harden being MVP is based on the fact that he's doing it on a team that they think can win a championship. Yeah. And they only think this team can win a championship because they think Kevin Durant's going to be there. If this was a team of just James Harden and Kyrie Irving, people would say he's doing a lot of similar things to what he did in Houston, which is lead a mediocre team.
That's a great point. Yeah, I think it's ironic, right? Because if KD is there the whole year, then I don't think either guy is in the conversation. MVP voting is kind of stupid.
Yeah, KD was kind of – he was in the mix. Like, he was actually 30 at the beginning. It was super early,
it's funny. But, yeah, I agree with you, though. I mean, I think Giannis would be in the conversation regardless at this point. I don't think if the whole field is healthy, he has a real chance of winning. I still don't know if he has a real chance. Again, Jokic and the Nuggets go on a tear. Dame and the Blazers go on a tear. Embiid comes back and plays more than we think. Harden has some memorable performances and KD sits out a lot. I think all of those guys are probably going to have a better shot just because it's a weird award. There's a lot of weird politics and unwritten rules that get bent and this way and that way. So, I'll be fine if he doesn't win. I hope he's at least considered. I get it. I get the playoff thing. And I know there's people who say, well, it's a regular season award. Should it matter? I don't know, but I do get it. And
it's a moving target. Like you said, it's a moving target. It's like, is it the best player on the best team? Is it the best stats, regardless of team? I mean, you know, it changes every year.
The best story, like Bran the Builder at the end of Game of Thrones, there's no telling how it's going to shake out.
It's the narratives. And you know, a lot of times with voters, they like to, at least in my estimation, having worked with some voters in the past and just seeing the way voting trends to and ends up trending, they like to create their narratives before the season and then see their narratives play out at the end of the season.
Nobody likes to be wrong.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of people don't.
Right.
I don't think no one likes it. Some people handle it better.
Yeah. And I think the Embiid and LeBron stories are just better for the narrative. Like, you know, all of these, there's a lot of media people who for years have been saying, if he would just shut up and go down into the post and not shoot as much, he could be dominant if he stayed off social media and all this stuff. And now he's shutting up and he's playing the best basketball of his career. And then there's a lot of guys who can now say, remember I said if Joel Embiid just shut up and played, he could be good. And then with LeBron, it's just like the whole like, okay, we could have given him MVP.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Every year, and he's 36, so now let's just give it to him.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't deserve it, but I, you know.
Yeah, I think both guys had cases, but I think you'd certainly do see some. A lot of goalposts moving when it comes to these conversations.
Fatigue is real. I mean, we've seen LeBron fatigue forever. So voter fatigue for a guy, you know, winning three in a row, it's tough. It's tough. Yeah. The last thing before we start getting to some of the other teams in the East and, you know, kind of take a gauge of where the East is at as the trade deadline and look at some of these guys who've been talked about.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
At this point, outside of, you know, the Harden trade earlier in the year and the Drew trade and like the offseason trades, and in terms of leading towards trade deadline trades, you guys have made the biggest splash at the moment, which is trading for PJ Tucker. How do you feel about him so far, and what was your guys' reaction when you got him?
It's funny because leading up to it, I was actually kind of anti-trading for PJ Tucker. I just, you know, you look at the numbers in Houston, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch a ton of PJ Tucker in Houston, but it was just, you know, the question that mattered with PJ Tucker when any team looking to acquire him was, is he washed or does he not give a damn about the Houston Rockets, right? Like those are it was one or the other thing was happening, maybe a little bit of both, but it was probably going to be primarily one or the other. And I thought he was washed. I'm not going to lie. And seeing him play now for a team where he obviously has much more impetus to care, it was a slam dunk move. Like he did a slam dunk's the corniest thing you can say with basketball analysis. It's a home run move. I don't think he's gonna have many slam dunks though. The defense, the defense is really good. He's very active. He's just great on that end. Tough rebounder, gritty guy. He's made one total shot, I think, one corner three. He's barely attempted any shots, but I put out today, if he makes one three every two games, it was such a good trade because they don't need that guy to score a lot. They really just needed a better stretch four to unlock better Giannis at the five lineups, and he certainly does that. So I don't think teams are going to leave him wide open. I don't think it's quite to that extent. And it wouldn't surprise me if he had one of those inexplicable playoff games where the guy makes like four threes or something.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of the best corner three-point shooters in the NBA. I think he's made, over the last 3 or 4 years, he's made the most corner
threes.
More
than anybody.
Yeah. I love PJ. And I admittedly, I think this year I didn't watch a ton of Rockets, but, you know, last year I watched a lot. I think he's one of the most underrated defenders in the NBA too.
Yeah.
Because for a guy who's built the way he's built and is not known as an explosive player, his lateral quickness and the way he moves his feet, like he could switch on to one through five and he can guard one-on-one. He's not shutting down the LeBrons and the Kawhis and those guys, but he can stay in front and he can guard guys. Like you're not afraid to play him in any lineup, whether it's at the four or the five. I'll be interested to see how they use him, because I noticed tonight he mostly was at the four.
Yeah. I think that's how it's going to be.
Yeah. I'd be interested. Although when he's with Portis, Portis is more of the five defensively and the four offensively, because Portis is more of a skilled stretch type player. So I guess it, in the second unit, it's that way. I also think it was like a genius just case of playing chess and everybody else playing checkers, because when you looked at it, I think fit wise, there was other teams in the East that desperately needed him more than the Bucks did. So if more than anything, like, you keep him away from the Nets, the Heat, and the Celtics.
Yeah. Yeah. The Heat went out and got Trevor Ariza. I'm much happier getting PJ Tucker than Ariza. Absolutely. And also I think I kind of alluded, I was going there and got distracted just by talking about how great PJ Tucker's been, but the trade itself made it a no lose, because I was concerned they'd have to give up something of note to get PJ Tucker, which is part of the concern. And instead, DJ Wilson, who is, you know, just was never going to play significant minutes, was heading into free agency, a non-factor. DJ Augustine, the most disappointing contract they signed this summer, bar none. He just didn't fit in with the team like they had hoped. You know, I think the expectation was he's going to lead the offense a little bit when two of the three top guys are sitting. He's going to hit his open threes. Obviously, he's going to have problems defensively being 5'11", but if he does all those other things, it'll be worth it. Didn't really deliver on offense at all. Was starting to hit some threes before they moved him, which maybe helped facilitate that. But on a three-year deal at his age and size, that thing was looking like an albatross. So they get off of both of that, basically move back a pick they owed to Houston a year, and then exchange this year's first, which they could only do that trade with Houston. It's a little fascinating thing, because they had to get their own pick back to trade the pick this year. But in exchange for the pick this year, they get Houston's second, which looks right now like it's going to be about four picks away from Milwaukee's first, with no trade restrictions on it, because it's a second round pick. The Stepien rule doesn't apply. So either they can use that pick and get a more cost controlled player, because the salary structure changes a lot from late first to early second, or they can trade it with more flexibility than they would have been able to before. So if you look at it from that way, getting PJ Tucker is almost the cherry on top. Like, the actual construct of the deal just rules. And it was like, I don't know why that, I guess the market wasn't as hot as people thought. I think, you know, the Brooklyns of the world were just really hoping it was going to be a buyout situation, but it really worked out well for Milwaukee and John Horace. I'm very, very impressed with what they managed to pull off there.
Yeah, that pick, I didn't even realize about the picks, because that pick is extremely valuable. Yeah. That pick, I mean, becomes a top five pick in the second round, is more valuable than probably the back 10 picks of the first round. So
exactly,
it's pretty impressive. All right, let's take a look around the rest of the league tonight. Like I said, not a slate of games that you want to really dive into. A lot of blowouts, but one of the blowouts, which was a remarkable one, is Toronto beating Denver 135-111. One, just two nights after Pascal Siakam says whatever he said to Nick Nurse, gets fined $50,000. I made the case yesterday that they were going to completely blow up this team, that it wasn't just Kyle Lowry, Norm Powell, that everyone should be on the table. Then they go out and do this. But in addition to this, we see at the end of the game, Kyle Lowry walking off, waving to the fans, gets in the tunnel, looks straight into the TV camera, waves goodbye, and looks pretty emotional. And I think the majority of people out there believe that that was him saying, I'm out, like, let's go. And now, obviously, the reports around Kyle Lowry have been fast and furious all week, mainly if he decides he wants to leave Toronto. Miami and Philly were the front runners. Woj today said, look out for potentially the Lakers. So now he's got three fan bases that are basically like wrapped, got Kyle Lowry's got them wrapped around their finger, because where does he want to go the most? Is what's going to happen.
Yeah. A powerful moment for the Raptors and their fans, for sure. And I think it's cool. Assuming he goes, which I think at this point, I mean, yeah, he literally threw up a peace sign to the camera, so it feels like a pretty good bet. Assuming he goes, at least amidst what's been a pretty awful season for them from Tampa, no less, it's cool they got to have that moment. From what it looked like to me, I wasn't watching closely with the Bucks game on, but like vintage Lowry game, I think early he had one missed shot, 0 points, and they were like plus 22 in his minutes or something. Just like the most classic Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, well, actually, here's the stat. he finished the game plus 42. It's the second highest plus minus in franchise history.
Of course.
Yeah.
He probably had the first two.
And he took five shots.
Vintage Kyle Lowry, which is why I really hope, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun, but not East. Send that guy to the West. I've had enough of Kyle Lowry in playoff series for my whole life. But I think it's a cool moment. I do wonder, though, if there's anybody in the league who would, you know, say wherever you want to go, Kyle, will facilitate it, and then maybe play that into a desperate, unknown dark horse candidate who's willing to give up more young players or draft picks. It would be Masai Ujiri, I feel like. Kind of a cutthroat guy at the bargaining table. I don't know. Maybe you can't do that with Lowry. It's just something that crossed my mind as we were talking. I don't know.
It is, you know, I think it for Masai's, for his popularity, it wouldn't be smart. But for his future, it might be smarter. Not that Masai's in any jeopardy.
He hasn't signed an extension. So it's complicated. It's a very complicated situation.
And I think, like, you know, I talk about it a lot on this show. Like, they gave a lot of money to a handful or three guys that I don't think are really the core of a championship team. Yeah. And now they're in a situation where they have Norm Powell, who looks like, according to Woj, half the league has reached out about him because he has a player option. You're going to have to pay Chris Boucher if you want to keep him. So they're in a situation where they have all these fringe guys who they're paying all this money to. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you're Masai to, like, try to get value out of it. I don't know if it'll happen.
I think I just thought of another reason why it won't. I think Lowry kind of controls his own destiny more than I'm giving him credit for, because there's extension talks wrapped up in this. And I think if you are going to give up a boatload, you probably do want that two-year $50 million extension he's been talking about. So
right,
he can always do that and refuse to sign if he
and like. Interestingly, like, our guys, Miami Heat beat from Blue Wire, and then the other guys down here from South Florida where I'm at, have said, like, multiple reports have said, it is literally Lowry's choice. Miami is ready. Like, they've said Miami will give him the two-year $50 million extension. They've made offers. I don't know what the offer is now. Actually, our guy, the Heat beat, just put out a pod about an hour ago saying that if a deal happens for Lowry, it would almost certainly involve Cleveland and Golden State, and it would end up being a four-team deal. They didn't really say who the principals from all the teams are, but they were of the belief that Olynyk would go somewhere and Jetty Osman would end up somewhere, and Kelly Oubre, who's being shopped, would move maybe to Cleveland and then pieces, you know, to make the money work. We'll see. They did that as a breaking news pod that the Warriors are. It was good. So
yeah, awesome.
It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I'm interested to know where you think would be the best spot for him. But I should say, like, we should give, I guess, as they say, like, give Lowry his flowers for what he accomplished in Toronto, because it's even more remarkable when you just look at the arc of his career, right? Gets drafted by Memphis, gets shipped out of town for Mike Conley, goes to Houston, plays decent for them, gets shipped out as they're getting James Harden in. So in his third team, he ends up becoming the best player in franchise history and an NBA champion. Doesn't happen that way very much. When you get traded twice like that, and it looks like you're a career, you know, transition guy. Like, you start to get that narrative of, like, oh, he's the guy before the guy. And he ends up going to Toronto and becoming a perennial all-star and arguably, I don't think it's really an argument, the best player in franchise history.
I think greatest is just cleaner.
Yeah.
I think Pete Kawhi is probably better than Pete Lowry,
best.
Certainly Bosch. Greatest.
Bosch.
Yeah. Certainly greatest Raptor. And I don't think there's a real case against it. His number is going to be in the jerseys, or his number is going to be retired. I meant to say, I think it's even more impressive when you look at, like, he gets to Toronto, and first his rep is he built there is he's a playoff choker. He's the opposite of what he ended up being. And I think something I've been thinking about more kind of as the Bucks go this season, and even as, like, trade guys are thrown around, like Evan Fournier, I think is less high profile because he plays in Orlando, but is kind of as a similar rep of, like, the numbers don't carry over into the playoffs. And someone said, who cares if Fournier goes to, like, Philly or Miami or wherever, like, the guy doesn't show up in the playoffs, the Bucks shouldn't be concerned. And my thought, and this is something I think about a lot now, a guy is a playoff choker until he's not, right? Like until he's in the right situation and he gets better players around him and he just gets better. And I think Kyle Lowry is proof right there of like, you can turn that narrative around. The book is not closed until you hang up the kicks for the last time. So yeah, I think super impressive turnaround from him getting bounced around from team to team, kind of always the bridesmaid, never the bride, to being the most important player in a franchise's history, probably for quite a long time. Super impressive stuff. Yeah, it's a good call out. It's as much grief as I've endured because of Kyle Lowry over the years. He absolutely deserves this. He's a great player.
The narrative thing is actually really interesting the way you put it, because you were seeing the same thing in Miami with Jimmy Butler, who was a cancer everywhere he went. And then he goes to Miami, he goes to the finals. And I think we're also seeing it sort of in an opposite way, potentially with Kawhi leaving Toronto, going to the Clippers. If they get bounced early again, now it's like, well, was it, we know he's a talented player, but maybe not really a leader, you know, like his narrative is sort of being flipped the opposite way. So it's interesting. Obviously you would prefer Lowry to go to the Lakers.
Yes.
Is there a team you think he would fit better with? Cause I know I've seen a lot of media people or a lot of people in general just say they think he's a better fit in Philly. I know he has a great relationship with Jimmy Butler. So, you know, Heat fans are dying right now. Like they are literally dying. It is crazy. Yeah. Heat Twitter. I tell you, doing my other podcast, I do this other show with North Cole about the Heat. So now I'm like fully entrenched in Heat Twitter for the first time since I left when I was working in the NBA. And it's fun, but it can get real, real dark when you're going through these tough times. And they're calling for it, man. These guys want Kyle Lowry real bad.
So I think fit wise, you could probably argue Miami is at the same level or similar or even a greater fit than Philly. I certainly, you know, I don't want any part of a team with Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry on the perimeter. I mean, that's just a nightmare to play against in a 7-game series. And not to mention, I mean, they're keeping Bam. So it's those guys and Bam Adebayo. That's a squad right there.
That team versus your Bucks, like those games are in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is like, the Bucks are better. They're better equipped to deal with the Miami style of just like making the game slogs and everything. But I don't want any part of that, but I really don't want any part of him on the Sixers. So I think people talk about him on the Sixers just because I think they get better with him than Miami does, just because they're better now. Like they're a really good team. I think it must be tough to think about the fact that they really could have had James Harden with this version of Embiid. I think that team is just like crushing the league personally. Like a lot of question marks with those two guys, but the potential of Harden and Embiid pick and roll over and over, I don't know what you do about that if you have Seth Curry and whoever else, Tobias Harris shooting. But I think they need that point guard who can move the ball around a little bit, space the floor. Obviously, Ben Simmons is a great playmaker, but not really in the half court, because we all know no one's going to respect that shot and he's never given anyone a reason to. And I think especially look at the playoff environment, which is, you know, that's what these teams at the top of the East are thinking about right now. I think everyone wants the first seed. I mean, the first seed in the East right now is quietly super important because you're guaranteed to only have to go through one of Brooklyn, Philly, Miami, or Milwaukee, whichever one you're not. So those three teams, I think, should be jockeying for it. But everyone wants playoff advantages. And I think Lowry does more for the Sixers just because right now you give Embiid in the post, you figure Simmons is just so limited in half court. They need Tobias Harris to do a lot in close games. That's a worrying thought. He's had a great year. That's a worrying thought. He has not been one of those guys who can deliver you a win in close playoff game after close playoff game. Lowry taking some of that load makes them so, so much better, in my opinion. And I think they have the juice to go get him still. So I hope that Morey sits this one out again and lets it ride. But they could be very scary to me if they add Kyle Lowry to that core.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's weird. I think the Lakers being in it is weird. Like, obviously, I get he's a bit of an upgrade from Schroeder, but what does that mean for Schroeder if they are going to get Lowry? It's a weird situation for me.
I don't even see how it works, honestly. Like,
unless they're giving up Schroeder.
They almost have to. I mean, the Raptors aren't taking Trez.
I know.
Trez and Kuzma, I don't see the interest there.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, it would probably be a multi-team deal. I think any of these are probably going to end up being multi-team deals. So, yeah, we'll see with Lowry. I think some of the points you made about Lowry with end-of-game stuff with Philly, I could make a similar point about Miami. Sure. Even though you have Jimmy Butler, you want the ball in his hands at the end of a game, and it's tough having him off the ball because he's not a shooter. He's also doesn't like he's just, I don't know. There's something about him in end of games where you don't totally trust if he has to end up with a pull, like a long pull up or a three, like it's not really the guy you want. Kyle is more equipped for that. So it gives you another option.
I think they'd run stuff with those two guys working off of each other. Some guard pick and rolls. They'd get funky. I mean, we know Spo will
for sure
bust out the bag of tricks. I think they'd certainly be better late game with Lowry out there.
Yep. All right. So elsewhere around the league tonight, the two other biggest, I'd say, names that are almost certainly sounds like they're going to get moved were playing tonight. We could talk. I mean, Orlando just beat Phoenix tonight, which is absurd. Yes. Obviously, Aaron Gordon, a huge name or one of the bigger names that's been on the market, requested a trade. Now it sounds like maybe he's coming back off of that a little bit, and they're not really known, but it does sound like he's going to be on the move. And Evan Fournier hit the game winner, who's another guy who it sounded like could potentially be on the move in the discussions. In the Boston discussions that were reportedly had, Fournier and Gordon were part of the deal that potentially for Marcus Smart. I don't know if Fournier is whether he's auditioning to stay or auditioning to go.
Yeah,
but this is a crazy win for them. Not that it matters, but Phoenix, because they're a mess right now. But good win for them. But the Aaron Gordon situation, the latest on him is that now the Rockets and the Magic have had serious discussions surrounding him. Which also I don't understand, but there's also been reports that like eight different teams, you know, Boston, Denver, Houston, T-Wolves, a bunch of teams have reached out. It sounds like he's going to get moved. It's just a matter of, I guess, which of these teams is willing to give up the most.
Yeah. I wonder at this point if we don't have other teams just throwing out or Orlando throwing out names or maybe even Gordon's agency to like
the agents.
There's so many teams interested. Let's drive the price up and get this guy somewhere else.
I feel like the same thing with Oladipo, who didn't play. Got blown out tonight again, unfortunately, but he didn't play tonight. So you're assuming he's on the way out. It sounds, I'm with you. Like a lot of these reports about both of these guys sound like they're agent driven.
I think some of the real reporting we've got on Oladipo is like, nobody wants to take the swing right now because everybody knows he wants a massive contract. He has not played since coming back from his latest injuries as a guy who deserves that kind of a contract. The shot isn't really there. I feel bad for him. You know, I think that first season with Indiana was such a renaissance for him. I don't think anyone is buying that he's that player. And, you know, maybe somebody should. Maybe like a mid-tier playoff team with less to lose. But if you're like the Lakers or a team like or Philly even, you probably get one big swing at the deadline when you're talking about a player who makes that much salary just because you have to match and you're not going to have that much salary to move around if you're that good, right? Like it's tied up in your good players. Nobody, I think, contending for a title wants to take the swing on Oladipo. There may be the Heat go and get him. I mean, obviously they have some big salaries there that I don't think they're too enamored with. So maybe that's their consolation prize. I don't know, but I'm interested in Aaron Gordon. Interested in your thoughts. I don't think he swings anything for anybody. Like I don't think anybody gets Aaron Gordon and suddenly I expect them to beat a team I didn't before. He should go somewhere else. Like he's been there for so long and never really feels like maximized his value there. But I don't think he's going to end up making a difference in this season.
Yeah, it's tough. He really does have such a high upside that, you know, we know that things can change so drastically based on situation, it's hard to know. Like he's been, you know, they've been a playoff team, but really he's been on a bad team for most of his career. So you don't know like what does injecting him into if he goes to Houston, no, it doesn't matter. Like why would you go to or the T-Wolves right now? Like they're a mess, but like Boston, who knows? I mean, maybe because their front court is brutal. I mean, and it would bring immediate stretch four who's shooting 40% and he's a great athlete and can, and again, helps and can, they can continue to play their switching lineups now if it means they have to move on from Marcus Smart, I don't know if that makes them better.
That's the issue, I think, with them.
But yeah, it's a huge toss up with Aaron Gordon because I do see the upside. It's there. And I always wonder about these guys who've basically played their whole career on shitty teams. Are the teams shitty because of them?
Yeah.
Or are they just a product of a bad situation? It could really go either way. You'll never know until it goes. But yeah, I don't see it moving the needle for a team to like if Boston did get him. No, I don't think that makes Boston a top four team right now, or even a top five team, maybe in the East, which a lot of people probably thought they would be. So, and then all the other teams, you know, Denver's an interesting one. I'm not sure what they'd have to give up.
They will never do it. Denver's so frustrating, man. Go get somebody. You have all these young players. You have all their draft picks, I'm pretty sure. But then they're always like, we would love Bradley Beal, but we're not going to include Bol Bol. Like, get out of here. Like, make a real move, Denver. You got Jokic playing like this. If you can get it, I don't know if Aaron Gordon's the guy for them, to be clear, but I'm so sick of Denver just because they're always like, we would love that guy, but Vlatko Kankar, I'm sorry, however it's pronounced, is off the table. It's like, come on, Nuggets.
Yeah. I think it was like a week ago where I saw that they were interested in Aaron Gordon and that Bol Bol would be included. And I got very excited because I've been big on the free Bol Bol movement.
Yeah, this year. Let him play somewhere at least.
Get him somewhere that appreciates him because I love that guy. I mean, he may never be able to actually play major minutes in the NBA, but give him a chance. He's so damn talented. It is. And he is so fucking fun to watch. It's crazy. And the other thing about Aaron Gordon going there is my other concern would be, how does it impact, you know, I think part of why people are looking at it is, does he defensively replace what they lost for Jeremy Grant? Yeah. But also moving him in there, does it impact what we're seeing with Michael Porter Jr., which is an emergence of the guy that a lot of people think he can be, which is a high, high level scorer and a solid defender. And, you know, does it take away touches from him? Maybe not, but he's looked really good. So I don't know. I think it would impact him too. So the Gordon thing is weird. The Oladipo situation is really weird. I don't know where either of them end up. It's just such a strange thing. I don't know. We literally may not know till 3 o'clock and then they may not go anywhere because I think there is a lot of posturing going on. It's a lot of teams trying to figure out how can they get this done for the least amount, right?
I think the guys playing tonight was the ultimate fuck you from some GMs to some other GMs. I really do think, because I know a lot of people noted, yourself included, it's weird that some of these guys are playing. Usually, you pull the guy. And I even heard that Oladipo was out for a legit personal reason.
I think a friend passed away or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
So even Oladipo, who is like very obviously shopped, like everybody except Andre Drummond showed up for this one. And Andre Drummond's been banished for a while now.
Right.
And LaMarcus is still gone too. But all the major trade candidates played. I really think it was like you know, everybody, I think, says in these situations, oh, we don't need to trade that guy. We love Aaron Gordon. We love Victor Oladipo. We love the upside. We don't want to trade him. You really got to blow us away. I think they all said, we're serious. Look, he's playing. We played him 33 minutes. We want him so bad. You better throw in that extra first round pick if you want to get that guy away from us. I think this is leverage next level because the league is in a weird in-between place. I think the play-in adds to it. More teams feel like they're involved in the playoff picture.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And there's just like less of a clear, almost like hierarchy of available guys. I think everyone's looking at Aaron Gordon saying, I don't know, maybe. And it's a little harder to talk yourself into Aaron Gordon than some of the guys we've seen moved in years past. So it's fascinating. I think they're playing chicken right now. I think at least one of Gordon Oladipo moves. I couldn't tell you which one. And I would say probably two of Fournier, Gordon, Oladipo. I really think Orlando's trying to cash out on some of these guys. But I don't blame them either. I mean, they got to shift it up. I mean, you mentioned it from Gordon's perspective, but how long can you spin the wheels with Vucevic, Fournier, you know, Gordon? They traded Oladipo when they shouldn't have for a terrible return. Fultz has been good, but he's not lifting them out of what they are. So yeah, they should do that. But I think they're playing chicken right now. And plus the plus side is like you mentioned with Fournier. Guy just hit a game winner, Boston or whoever. He's going to change your season. Those two firsts.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. A guy who didn't play last night and hasn't played in a little bit, but it's been an injury, supposedly, is Lonzo.
Yeah.
Who I talked about again yesterday. I just don't understand why he's on the block. I think he's too good for them. And I tweeted earlier today, like, he is trending towards a player that they are going to regret big time not giving money to and keeping there. He's too good. The Woj says the Bulls are a team to watch, which would be, I think that's scary for the East, because the Bulls, I think, are a little bit ahead of schedule. Kobe White coming off the bench as a scorer off the bench and putting Lonzo next to Zach LaVine would be really good, and for a long time too.
He is the perfect complement to Zach LaVine. And I think if the Bulls could pull that off while somehow making Lauri Markkanen, who personally I get some Bargnani vibes from, if they make him the centerpiece of that trade, I think that's highway robbery. I agree with you. I think the Pelicans should keep Lonzo and figure it out. And the most common rebuttal to that I see, besides folks who don't watch, you know, and Lonzo sucks, sure, whatever, he doesn't. He's a very good role player now.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But really good fit on teams with, you know, a lot of guys who need the ball. But it's like, oh, they're gonna run out of salary cap room before they're good enough to contend with a title with Zion and blah, 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 with Lonzo and Brandon Ingram and Zion. It's like, and you're telling me you can't trade Brandon Ingram whenever for a lot of stuff? Like, positive value contracts are good. You could trade Lonzo for a lot of stuff later on if you really need to. I think at this point, I've completely shifted. I think cap space is the most overrated commodity in basketball. Like, if you have it, use it, sure. But I think trying to open up cap space is dumb, because you can just do like a sign and trade and use the salary pieces you have as weapons too. And if they're good players, then they're worth more than cap space. So I'm with you. I say keep Lonzo, figure out the issues there, try to move on from Bledsoe, who I hate his fit with Zion and Steven Adams. I think Steven Adams is helpful. Maybe even look at moving on from him. Just again, he and Zion, I just don't like that on offense.
But it's terrible. Yeah.
I don't think Lonzo's the issue. I agree with you. I think they will regret it this time next year if they trade him to like the Bulls. And I don't think they'll be in a better place than they are now.
Yeah, I don't know how – I've seen some reports, and I don't know how credible they are that they would attach – that they would use Lonzo to potentially attach Bledsoe or Steven Adams to get him out of
there. That's not worth it to me.
No. No, I don't think so either. And I also think, like, as much as people are making a big deal about the contract, they're saying he wants $20 million. And it sounds like a lot. But in, like, 2 or 3 years, it may not be a lot of money for Lonzo Ball. Like, I do think he's trending towards a top – 15, potentially top 10 point guard in the NBA. He might already be a top 15 point guard in the NBA. And like, you know, you're talking about Kyle Lowry, who's 35 years old, getting $25 million a year for 2 more years, or Lonzo Ball, who's shooting 40% from three and is a 6'6 guard who can now play off the ball and defend guard, like bigger guards at 23 years old for $20 million. You know, to me, it's like, the big guards that people are talking about in the trade market are Lowry and Oladipo. Everyone should be going after Lonzo Ball. If it's really a matter of $20 million, hey, let's go get Lonzo Ball.
Yeah. I mean, if you have to figure out how to reroute Bledsoe somewhere else now or later, you figure that out. It's not, speaking as a Bucks fan, it's not that hard to do. Yeah. I think there's a lot of upside with Lonzo. I think I agree with you, which doesn't make for a great podcast necessarily, at least not an adversarial one, but no, it's Lonzo's good. And if they're smart, they'll keep him, but they've made some odd decisions since David Griffin came in.
They're stacking their mini OKC, except they have more talent right now, just stacking draft picks, you know?
Yeah.
Which is another thing I hate. I mean, like, you know, how many of those draft, you can't draft 30 players. They're not going to pan out. You know, it's sort of to your point earlier, you know, all these late first round picks, they're not going to pan out. They mean nothing. Everyone talks about how draft picks are like the currency of the NBA right now, but you know, how many draft picks can you use? It just doesn't work. It just really doesn't work.
I think OKC is going to be poised. Like if they get a Cade Cunningham this year, I think within a year from drafting him, they cash in a lot of those for a guy like Lonzo who becomes available. And then suddenly you get SGA, Cade, or whoever, an ex-young player you then acquire who some other team like New Orleans is moving on. I think that's their goal. I hope they're not going to try and use most of these. And I mean, if you're forced to blow it up with the weird Paul George thing, I don't hate what they've done. I get it. I think it makes sense for them. But I agree with you. I don't love like the prostrating at the feet of Sam Presti every time he gets a 2027 second round pick for taking on $1 million. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, you need players at some point, but I guess I'm kind of fence sitting on that one, but I agree with your point that draft picks have become highly overrated in the league.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the Cade Cunningham thing with them, because I think I think a lot of people are thinking this too, is tonight, as of now, they're now saying that Shea has a long-term injury.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that they're just way too good for what their roster is, and they're ruining their pick. Like, they're playing way too well.
Presti must not be able to believe some of the lineups that he's putting out there for Billy Donovan, or not Billy Donovan, excuse me, I forget the new coach's name now. And they keep winning these games. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I bet he's out for the year. I bet they shut him down, because they're not getting Cade Cunningham the way they're playing right now. Yeah. So they need to start getting into tank mode. You know, one guy who did not play tonight, who I think could potentially be a steal of this deadline, and he's probably going to be a throw-in, is JaVale McGee. I love JaVale McGee.
He's good. He's really turned. Talk about a guy like Lowry who turned his career around.
Oh my God.
He absolutely did the same thing.
Three-time NBA champion. The guy he has a chance, because he's going to go to a contender probably, to be like one of the all-time role players. He's going to he could get a fourth title. And if you watch Cleveland play, which most people don't because they stink, he's good. Like, he's not a bad player. If you play him 15 minutes a game, he's a really good backup center at this point in his career, and he has championship experience. He's going to be a throw-in. He's going to go to a contending team, and he's going to be good. And he didn't play tonight. So I got to think, and he has been, you know, since they shut Drummond down, he's been their main backup center behind Jared Allen. So there you go. There's a guy who finally, you know, they said, hey, take a seat. We need you. We need you to be part of these three-team deals. So please just stay healthy.
And I think they're also like, you know, we got you. We're not going to keep you around here. You're not going to sign after the year. We got our center. We're excited about now. I think that makes this easier. Let's see if we can get a pick. I think he gets bought out if they can't make a deal happen. But I don't think it should be that hard for them to make a trade. I was mocking DJ Wilson for JaVale for like a month, because I agree with you. I think if you're looking for a backup center, I don't think you can do any better with guys who are available right now. I think he's cut out a lot of the nonsense that plagued him earlier in his career. And I think some of the Shaq and a fool stuff was A, just Shaq being a jerk, and B, some just really, truly unfortunate mistakes. I don't think all of it was on JaVale. A good amount was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was in a Wizards organization that was an absolute mess. Awful. He was drafted there with Nick Young. You know, they're doing the cinnamon challenge, and like, they're, you know, they're doing stupid stuff on camera. And then they play with Gil, who does and Javaris with the guns. I mean, again, situational things with players, right?
Yeah.
If you get drafted to the wrong situation, your career is going to be over. He just happened to survive that bad part of his career, and he's turned it around. It is remarkable the turnaround that he's made in his career. And he's good. And he's like a good player. Like, he does make some dumb mistakes still, but not like before, where every time he touched the ball, it was like, all right, now he's going to be on the low lights, you know?
Yeah. I mean, every player is going to have some turnovers. JaVale's just can be ridiculous sometimes, but if he's not doing it at a higher rate, it really truly doesn't matter, right? Like, if his one turnover a game is a ridiculous one, and, you know, somebody else's is more boring, it's still one turnover per game. So yeah, I think he could help a team a lot. I think Brooklyn would be useful there. The Lakers could certainly use him. I know they apparently really want Andre Drummond. I think they'd probably be better off with JaVale McGee, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the first Cavs game I watched this year, the first possession I saw JaVale McGee, he hit a corner three, and then the next possession down, he hit a step back jumper at the elbow, and I'm like, I love JaVale McGee now. I was like, this is my favorite player to watch in the NBA, because it's almost like he could have played for any contender, but he decided, yeah, I'm going to go to Cleveland and just do whatever. I'm just going to play and have fun, which is fun to watch for a guy like that. It's interesting. You mentioned Drummond. That's a great one, because so there's the three main buyout guys that are really out there. We'll probably finish off with these three guys. Drummond, who reportedly a lot of people are saying will go to the Lakers. But interesting, and this is where, you know, this time of year, the reports, they get funky, right? Kevin O'Connor, about 2 hours ago, maybe, put out a report to watch out for the Knicks in the buyout market for Andre Drummond. An hour later, Mark Berman from the New York Post, the Knicks are not going after Andre Drummond in the buyout market. So it's just funny. But Yeah, the Lakers have been the team linked to Drummond the most. You know, I again, here we go again with a guy who has spent his whole career on in a bad situation. So what do we know? Fair. Like, if he goes and plays for a championship team, he could be great for them. But you know, if he they're saying he would go there and immediately be the starter because I don't think they're happy with the way things have gone with Marc Gasol.
He just doesn't play offense anymore. He just, or at least he doesn't score. He likes to pass, but he just chooses to not shoot anymore. And that can be difficult to overcome despite all the other things that Marc Gasol does really well. I don't know. I think Andre Bogdan on a good team is much better. I think everyone who plays with LeBron is going to look a lot better, sure. Or most guys at least. I think I just wish he had Bogdan more on defense, more consistently throughout his career. I know he's gotten DPOY votes because he rebounds a lot. Terrific rebounder, to be sure. He's just never been that great, impactful defender you would like a center of that stature to be if he's not going to be a knockdown shooter or a tremendous passer. So I think his ceiling is not high, but again, the Lakers just aren't working with a lot. So I do think he'll probably get a refreshed Andre Drummond in LA. I think he'd help them. You know, you could make the case that JaVale could help them more. I'm not sure. I do think some of Dre's offense can come from him handling the ball a little bit, and he's not going to do that at all when LeBron is on the court. But maybe when LeBron's not out there, he'll work with Schroeder a little bit. I mean, it's for a no-risk move. You could certainly do worse. Guy's been an all-star before, but I don't look at him as a huge needle mover either.
Yeah. And then the other two, obviously, you mentioned LaMarcus. I think Aldridge, it sounds like he's going to the Heat. Like, there hasn't really been any other teams at this point that I've even, I think maybe there were some teams before, but at this point, it just sounds like it's sort of a foregone conclusion unless in the 25th hour, some team offers them something, but who's going to pay $24 million to bring that guy in? So it sounds like he's going to the Heat. And then the other one, it sounds like the Pelicans are buying out JJ Redick, which is a really interesting one because, I mean, any team could use a guy like JJ Redick if he's healthy. Nets are a team that it seems like he could really end up. He lives in Brooklyn, or he has a place in Brooklyn. Seems like a Brooklyn guy.
He really does.
And it sounds like they're going to buy him out with the idea that he's going to go to like an Eastern Conference team.
It's weird. I don't know. It's the PJ Tucker question. Like, is he washed or is it just not a fit there? Worst 3-point shooting season of his career in several years now. Not starting anymore, which is weird. He's been a starter for quite a while. It wasn't always last year, but I actually don't like the Brooklyn fit because it's like you have Joe Harris, who is like the now much better version of JJ Redick, and on defense, like Joe Harris actually a good defender. JJ Redick is the opposite of that. So, I mean, I guess again, it's kind of like the Blake thing was with them for me. Sure, why not get him, I guess, if it's free. I don't think it's going to be a huge factor for them. It's like Boogie Cousins and with the Warriors. I don't know how much this is really going to matter, but I guess it gives you a shot, like a roll of the dice, right? Maybe it really works. I don't think it would matter. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. But with Harris there, I really scratch my head at that one. It's like, how many specialist shooters do you need on the team? And you have the best one in the league right now, basically. But if that's where he wants to go and they want to just keep uniting these ring chasers, why not?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. It's like you got three of the five players from Lob City.
Oh, and, yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. You know? That's a good point.
But also it's just like if he's going there solely to chase a ring and understands what his role is, he'd be the best like spot starter 5 to 10 minute a game guy who randomly will give you a 15-point game when you need it. But if he understands like you're only going to play if Joe's not playing or if Harden, you know, if we need you to play, then we're going to throw you in there to spots. Cause like he's probably still better than like Timothy Luau Cabarrot and Landry Shamet. Right.
Yeah, so, and Cork Maz and guys like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. That's pretty much it. I do want to say before we wrap up, there's one game we didn't really talk about because there wasn't many trade implications, but I want to shout out Caris LeVert tonight, 28 points, clutch three at the end of the game. I love it. You know, it's scary for East teams because that team is getting healthy and they're pretty good. But I just love to see Caris LeVert healthy and playing good basketball. It's such a cool story. Every time he steps on the court, it's a cool story. But now seeing him get back in the rhythm is very cool.
Yeah, I was down on that trade for them, and he's proven me wrong. Before, obviously, we found out about the terrifying medical situation that really made it one of the most complex and weird trades I think I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. The fact that I think that he had, I forget where, but he was basically diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
A cancerous tumor that had to be removed.
It was on his kidney, I believe.
It was on his kidney. I think that's exactly right. And it's just the NBA is such a weird place, because that the result of that was an extra second round pick being involved in the deal. Like, what kind of a weird situation. But overall, just so glad that he's healthy and that was caught. One of the best times for any player to be traded. Clearly, it really worked out.
Potentially saved his life. It's crazy.
Seriously, but so glad to see him back already and playing very well. And I hope it continues. I don't want to overshadow that. Do you buy that they're listening to offers on Brogdon and potentially Sabonis?
So, you know, I'm glad you asked, because I absolutely don't believe on the Sabonis thing at all.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing Brogdon too. It just doesn't make sense. Unless there's just, like, I saw one of the things said, like, they think Caris LeVert could maybe be a point guard for them, but I don't see that.
Two guys who can handle the ball, though. Like, that's my thing. That's like when the Kings didn't want to take Luka. It's like, oh, we have Fox and he handles the ball. Two guys are allowed to dribble. Like, we've seen this work. I don't think we should write off the possibility. I think maybe they would trade one of those guys if an offer was crazy. I don't expect either, especially Sabonis, but either to get traded before.
Yeah, I mean, last night, Dan made the point that, like, if anybody's getting traded from that team, seemingly you would think it would be Miles Turner, maybe.
For the fifth straight year.
Yeah. Right. But to me, it's like, and I agree with what he said, we've still haven't seen this team fully healthy because they don't have TJ Warren. Like, this is a dangerous team if you have Brogdon, LeVert, TJ Warren, Sabonis, and Turner on the floor. So it's just like, I mean, I don't buy it. Let me ask you something about Malcolm Brogdon.
Sure. Oh, here we go.
I think part of where I can never get fully on board with the Bucks is when they let go of Brogdon.
Terrible move.
Okay. So Bucks fans sort of agree there that never should have happened.
Yeah. I sold myself on it at first, foolishly. The injury concerns are real. I mean, we've seen it crop up in his career since the move, but it's like, it's one of the things that helped me learn that lesson about cap space or availability versus just having good players on fair contracts. I think they would have been better off. But I do think at the end of the day, it worked out because they end up with Drew. I was going through this kind of mentally the other day. Let's say they don't do that and somehow maybe they get rid of Bledsoe. Do they go farther in the bubble playoffs? And then do they not feel the need to get Drew? Or do they still make that trade to maybe save a pick on the back end? Who knows? I think when you have Giannis, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, yada, yada, yada down the line, probably just laugh with the emoji where the guy's laughing, but he has the sweat bead. Yeah. That's my feeling on how it's all turned out. But yeah, I mean, not signing him and getting, you know, a couple picks and then saying he was a luxury when, you know, you didn't win it all. There's no such thing as a luxury on a team that doesn't win it all.
Right.
Terrible move, terrible decision making. Thankfully, they've mostly undone it. But yeah, no, it was dumb. It would have been a lot better if they had him all of last season and for that playoff run.
Yeah, no, I like, you know, it's interesting to hear that because I've loved Brogdon since his rookie year. I just think he's such an ideal point guard in the NBA. So it's like, I thought it was huge for the Pacers, and turns out, I mean, it would just be so weird to me if they traded him.
That should be such a win for them that they got him, like they were able to secure him. Like, I think that's the kind of things that people underrate. Like, organizations love that kind of stuff, man. Like, I think Chris would be here anyway in Milwaukee, but like, I think the Bucks are very proud that accidentally they secured him and developed him from a G League guy with the Pistons who was a throw-in on the Brandon for Brandon night for Jennings trade, and now he's become this, you know, two-time All-Star or whatever it is. It just means something to the teams, and I feel like they enjoy keeping those guys around when it's like, oh, this is a symbol of our team doing something very good out here.
Yeah, and even more for the Pacers because they signed him outright, right? Like, free agents don't go to Indiana. No one wants to go to Indiana. So the fact that they signed what turns out to be a big time free agent now. Like, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. That's it's again, there's, it's all smoke. Like we're probably going to get to 3 o'clock tomorrow and have very few trades. Like it just, it's what I thought. That's why all this activity this week has been sort of weird to me in the first place. Cause I just thought this can be slow. Like no one wants to spend money right now. That's why the buyout market is more, it seems like it's probably going to be more active than the trade market. Although this Kyle Lowry thing seems like it's real.
Yeah, I think that's gonna be the big one. It feels like to me. That's the one that I think could make an impact. Right now, I don't see anybody else who actually gets moved being a huge slash. Maybe Fournier, maybe Gordon, but Lowry is the no doubt one to me.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, dude, Ty, this was awesome. This was fun. I'm glad I get to really dig in on the Bucks because I honestly, you know, I watch them, but I have fallen into the trap of like, I don't know if I believe or not. So I want, sure. Let me focus on other teams. I have fallen in this trap where I'm like, I feel like I know the Bucks. Let me watch other teams to learn about them. But I probably don't know the Bucks because I feel like they are a very different team this year. So I'm glad we got to have this conversation. Eurostep podcast on Blue Wire podcast. It's the best Bucks podcast out. At Ty Windisch on Twitter, Ty spelled TiWindisch. Go follow him. Great Bucks follow. Appreciate you coming on, man. Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, we got playoffs not too far off. We're going to have to do this again. I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me, Joey. Much appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciated. Yeah. Nicer if I could talk, but.
Yeah, hey, look, no problem. I appreciate you coming on. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Ruben Palacios, the sneaker king from CBS Sports, guest host tomorrow. So looking forward to that one. The biggest Lakers fan I know. So it's probably going to be a rough day for him. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Later.